It's okay to be the hero, as long as you win.
For another Dick Wolf themed podcast roundtable, we have Aaron White. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi.
And Oliver Rockside from the 27th Precinct podcast. Welcome, Oliver.
Thank you very much for having us,
Cam. Absolutely. And there's plenty of podcasts, and don't get me wrong, we've done plenty of retrospects on One Chicago, SVU, and the FBI's. It's time to visit the recent insurrection of the OG Law and Order. Joining the cast for the long-running show, it is technically the 21st and 22nd seasons, we have returning as the district attorney Jack McCoy, played by Sam Waterston. We have a bunch of newcomers. We briefly had senior detective Kevin Bernard show up, as well as the newcomers, junior detective Frank Cosgrove, played by Burn Notice's Jeffrey Donovan, Lieutenant Dixon, played by Cameron Mannheim of The Practice and Person of Interest fame. We have Assistant DA Samantha Maroon, played by newcomer Adelia Halevi, who you can see in Black Adam and Why Women Kill. You have Executive DA Nolan Price, played by Hugh Dauncey of Downton Abbey 2 and The Path fame. And he was also previously on Hannibal. Returning in brief guest spots are Assistant DA Jamie Ross from the original show, Lawyer Sanford Reams, played by Dylan Baker. And we also have, I know it's a lot to go for, guys. Dave Saver, played by Michael Boatman, returning, as well as various other multi-character actors, and even potential rumors of just other characters that might rejoin the show. Other recent additions to the cast are Violent Yi, played by Connie Shee of Jimmy Schmidt fame, as well as Detective Shaw, played by I think it's DeCobb. How do I pronounce that? I should have thought of that.
I think it's Mikad Brooks. Yeah,
Mikad Brooks. Mikad Brooks, Mortal Kombat and Desperate Housewives fame. So we got a giant cast. We're already into the second year it's been back, and they've already done a big giant three-parter crossover with both SVU and Organized Crime Stabler show. And once again, there's no shortage of content. We've had so much material that's mirroring today's deal. We've had a lot of ones that are so, you know, Elon Musk inspired and Silicon Valley is, as well as ones dealing with Asian American hate crimes. We have a whole roster of stuff to choose from. So how long have you guys been with the franchise? Were you there from day one, or did you get into it in reruns?
Well, so when I was growing up, Law and Order was aired on A&E, a network that likely doesn't exist anymore. 90s. Every day, I want to say from 5 p.m. to midnight or so. So it was
pretty common. Yeah.
It was the backdrop of my upbringing. So if it wasn't The Simpsons, it was Law and Order. So I feel like It's been part of the fabric of my growing up. And so it's really interesting to return to it now, later in life, as people are trying to resurrect these ideas. But so I would say, I mean, some of this I watched when it was new and some of it would have already been in rerun. But I have been a fan for probably more years than I care to admit. But Oliver?
The 11 o'clock showing on Annie was my lullaby. Every night I have this weird thing of having to go to sleep with the TV on. My
you're,
sleep
you're not
time,
alone
my sleep timer gets a workout. But that's how I maybe discovered it it would have been four seasons in, because that's when the syndication would take over.
That's what Sam Waterston would then join the following year.
And so they would go back and do the Zunza ones and the Sorvino ones. And so that's what really got me addicted to it, because at that particular time, there was nothing like it on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, it truly was OG in a police procedural way. So that's where I got the bug, as it were.
And the 27 precinct, you know, it's just so wild how it's been just loosely just referenced in other New York-based shows. It's even, to make it even more meta, it's in a... They mentioned it in a NYPD Blue episode. So they're like, okay, I guess they're in the same universe to New York set shows.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, and like you say, it's like, you know, you'll see some people really praise it, you know, like when they like a compelling crime show that's trying to be somewhat plausible. And then you'll see others who could never get into that, or CSI. And it's like, well, there's a difference between all these procedurals, just like there's a difference between all these Sopranos, Oz, and Breaking Bad type gangster and crime thriller shows. It just seems like, I guess, audiences have become a little more cynical, and yet, you know, this still had a high turnout. A lot of people were just like stoked. It's like, wow, okay, some of the familiars are back, and then this whole new roster is played by reliable character actors, and they're down. And
right,
there's been all kinds of stuff here so far, including you know, military foul play. There, I was really digging the they had like Manhattan socialites, an OxyContin one that, you know, impacted the newest DA Price, his personal background. Is like, man, they're really trying to change this up really pretty well to make you can't not be edgy on Law and Order. You gotta have just like some kind of gray morale or just something to make the court case stand out, because that's what you're really looking for, is just that filled speech. You're just like, ooh, that got me.
I mean, I think one thing we talk about on the 27th Precinct quite a bit is how this show does a very good job of maintaining its character, but also picking up on the news items of the day. So always, just you're describing, right? These sort of very, you know, 2022 storylines, but that fit a framework that was established, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah. And even that's true. It's they're much like today's procedurals, you know, or let alone even real life cops are still having to use old tactics, you know, and use what very limited technology you might even have, depending on your district. You know, we're seeing all kinds of stuff that was important then. It's still important now. We see Lieutenant Dixon use sign language in one episode. And I was like, okay, see, not everyone can do that, but that's an invaluable thing that I don't think everyone likes to downplay. Is, and yes, it does do a lot of the same stuff, just still so well, like it never left the airwaves. You're still seeing the same organized SWAT team and DNA collecting, and then planning a proper legal defense for something that's just very hard to prosecute. And did you guys catch how some of the popular actors who are now doing a lot of directed a few episodes? We saw Melina Govich, who you might know as Cassidy, as well as Elizabeth Rome, Serena, the DA. You know, it's just like they each directed a few episodes. It's like interesting. It's cool to see. You never leave that Dick Wolf family, basically.
Oh, I thought they were kind of make do's. I think they were,
probably.
I think he was probably trying to make up for how badly he treated both of their characters.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know, the Cameron Manheim one is interesting, because I'm not a big fan of
the show.
She was in a She was in third season where she was an interpreter for a deaf client. So,
oh, wow.
So obviously ASL is on her resume, I would guess.
Yeah.
She was a guest actor, I think twice or three times in various early times days.
In SVU. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny about the structure because, Aaron knows me well enough to know that whenever they go outside of the structure, I immediately do an eye roll because I hate when they vary from the structure. Because that to me is what makes the show.
No, that's fine. Whatever makes it for you. And this is what's interesting is just seeing what makes fans fall in love with the show versus what drives them crazy. I was this way with Ray Donovan, where it's just like, okay, that's a cool subplot that needed to end five episodes ago.
Right.
you've worn yourself out. And so far, other than the crossover, there was like maybe one or two cases that kind of to me felt like they were meant to be SVU episodes, and they just had, again, Cosgrove and Shaw solve it instead. But other than that, it seems still pretty old school. They're not trying to have it be any necessarily too morbid or more gruesome than usual.
I don't have an objection to when they do a case that may have been an SVU case. To me, the best episode of this particular season was one that perhaps SVU would have dipped their toe in. As long as they give me 22 minutes of Law and 22 minutes of Order, and I don't have to know about anybody's personal life, I'm there.
Oh, good. So far they seem to, it seemed like when Law and Order kind of had a habit of whenever there was a new detective or new assistant DA introduced, they always had second thoughts like, holy shit, how to get into this. And they didn't really do it this time around. It's like, no, you're set for the count. You're the new guy and you're good at what you do. So it was like, I kind of wish they could have at least given Bernard kind of a farewell, but it was what it was. I think they were just like, okay, I was the starter. Same thing with Jack McCoy. You kind of wish you could see him do another speech, but you just know, okay, Sam Washington, you got up there in age. He's just not going to do a speech. We have, again, 10 plus years of earlier speeches to dig through. So we're just going to have him just introduce the cases now. But I like how Price and just when he sets off to do a case, he's all kind of about, how am I going to do this? And they keep you in suspense. How is he, what surprises is he going to have in the courtroom? And then Samantha is kind of, so wild. Adelia, just she's a newcomer, an Israeli actress. She looks so much like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to me, where I'm like, she should be in that biopic. She can claim that right. But she doesn't have any second thoughts about anything. She's just a matter of, can I live with this? And it was interesting how they had to have her. It seemed like every other female DA often got a he said, she said case, and she was getting more of, hey, I can use this person as a witness, but it's unfortunately going to slut shame them or disgrace their name, and I got to live with that. So it's an interesting arc that they got for her on a lot of these cases now.
Well, we talk a lot about, I think we like that character, but we think she's often underused, because I think you hit on something important. Like, she's really good in the episodes where there's kind of a moral gray area or kind of a questionable task that needs to be done. Like, she is not afraid to get her hands dirty, and she's a character I think that could have a lot of depth, but some episodes she gets it and some episodes she's window dressing. So I don't know what the writers are going to do with that character. I want to see her continue into,
I hope so, yeah,
and continue to kind of grow with her. But
I can only hope.
It's really uneven what she, if she gets much to do in an episode.
We can only hope. I'm with you. It does seem like she'll get a lot of screen time. Same thing with the cops. Like, sometimes you'll get a lot of moments with Cosgrove and Bernard and this season Shaw, and then other times she's like, okay, that they already did a badass arrest, but it was only 10 minutes. Now we're going straight into the crime solving and then the prosecution.
I think Aaron and I kind of want Maroon and Price to switch.
yes, we
because Price, like I thought Hugh Dancy was fantastic in Hannibal. I loved Hannibal. I thought it was very underrated. I've never watched Downton Abbey, so I don't know. I can't make a comparison there.
Yeah, he was just in one of the movies, just a brief supporting part. But yeah, I'm with you.
I found him to be very weak in this particular iteration. And Maroon to me is the star of this show. I mean, among the six characters, I think she is the breakout person, and certainly the one who seems to be giving it 100%, because sometimes Aaron and I somewhat doubt whether other people are giving 100%.
No, that's a good point, because Price kind of would get a lot of screen time at first, but you didn't see a method to his madness until like much later. Same thing with the lieutenant. It's like, okay, good actress introducing everything, but she's not getting as, it took about like, I think the seventh episode before, much like Van Buren, she gets to spearhead a campaign or a big part of the proceedings, you know, or be like Captain Benson, you know, on SVU, where he's like, okay, I'm going to lead this manhunt and get justice for this victim and then introduce it to the courts. And Cosgrove was kind of the same way too at first. We didn't see enough about him until like much later, where he's like, hey, I need to find out who killed my cop friend or this and that, this one rapist who fronted my daughter. And Maroon does seem to, he's like, okay, yeah, we need to have her get her own, like, 5+ episodes where she does her own thing, you know, like Jack.
I think one of the unique things about this is that I can't even say, I mean, I was a big fan of Abby Carmichael, but I can't even say that any of the assistant DAs that we've had, Brooks, you know, Carmichael.
Brooks is Robinette. That's a good point.
Yeah. Robinette. You know, all of these people, I never got the feeling that one should be replacing Michael Moriarty or Sam Waterston.
No, but that's a good point.
In this particular amalgam of characters, I think Maroon, like if I was Jack, I'd just go, you two, we're switching.
Yeah. It does make you wish they could be more like SVU or even Criminal Intent, you know, like Intent would do that a lot. Okay, this episode it's Imes and Wheeler. Okay, now
I have a terrible soft spot for the first 5 seasons of Criminal Intent. I think it's people have forgotten it, but the first 5 seasons were fantastic.
Yeah, it seemed like after a while it then became a Gorn versus Jeff Goldblum's character battle, and it's like, this isn't a contest.
You know, being a Star Trek fan, I get used to scenery chewing. It's part of the deal when you're a Star Trek fan.
No, and the Star Trek's a good contrast. This was pretty much like that.
D'Onofrio just chews so much scenery. And but the brilliance though is, and it, speaking of casting, is that Catherine Herbe, who is another unsung person in the Law and Order universe, is the one who kind of balances that out, because she's such an understated actor. But getting back to the Law and Order thing, I think Maroon should be I think Yee as well. I mean,
we love Yee. We think he's great.
Yeah, you talk about Yee, Aaron, because I the other two don't do anything.
Well, and so this is what we find, where although I'm warming up to the Shaw character and liking him quite a bit, where I think we felt that in this new incarnation, the law side of the episodes are often lacking. And so we see these two men kind of bumble around, and then Violet Yee pops up with some astute observation.
Yeah.
Or some hot
lead. The first gal they had.
But she's always saving the day, you know? In her understated kind of second-tier character sort of way. But I think
they'll give her more, unlike some of the other detectives who would only be seen seated at a desk. But I was in love with her when she was just responding to that, you know, Asian American hate crime. She's like, I need to be more and more heavily involved with this. And I'm like, yes, you should, please.
Well, they didn't even name her to begin with. And Aaron and I had an ongoing joke about calling her Lady Profaci because they wouldn't tell us who she was.
I barely heard Yay pronounced. And it's kind of how I am with some seasons of Criminal Minds. When someone joins, but they're not even in the opening credits, you're like, oh, right. You better be paying them more than a guest star. I need to know who I'm following. But yeah. I have heard rumors of Robinette making a cameo.
I'd love that. I loved Robinette. You better have the flat top, though. I
demand it. He probably won't. And
I know.
Angie, I did hear stuff about Angie Harmon's Abby Carmichael, and even who was another one who was teased. Maybe another appearance by Detective Green, by Jesse L. Martin, or Curtis, by Benjamin Bratt. It's a maybe.
You could live without Benjamin Bratt.
Yeah, no.
Not a Curtis fan. Okay.
Well, what I like about the show is that, of course, everyone has their own taste, right? And I speak very strongly and confidently about my own. But there's enough different kinds of characters where everyone can have their favorite detectives. Everyone's got their favorite TV, right? And so that's what I love about it. Where as much as I'll trash talk the Benjamin Bratt character all day, someone loves that character, right? And they should.
He was on for 4 years.
But it offers something, I think, to different kinds of audiences and different kinds of people with different taste. And this show, part of its strength is like its mass appeal without diluting what they're trying to do. And that's hard.
Oh, no, that is true. And sometimes it also... I like the contrast to Star Trek because it is kind of, regardless of who is or isn't your favorite captain or second hand or tertiary character, you know, it's filmed in a way where you just can't not look at what's happening on screen. It's just something compelling about it. Even like I have my issues with a lot of the Chicago PD guys who are just breaking about every single law. to where I'm like, I'm not sure I root for them anymore, but I just can't not look at them because the show is intriguing. And so it is, like you say, it is interesting how just some of them just really stand out. And then depending on whether you like or don't like that character, you're like, well, I mean, they're effective, but I want a little less screen time than that one.
Well, on the episode that came out on December the 12th, so the day that we're recording, we did have some Christmas wishes, and one of them was a casting. So I will leave it at that, so people can go and listen to the episode.
Listen to the episode, guys.
But it was none of the people that you mentioned. But yes, we are hoping for more guest stars or guest reappearances.
They can't not. I mean, there was one actor who was playing Judge Fields, I think, for a few episodes. And I was like, I know that guy. He's been on the show like 5 to 7 times. It's a pretty big episode. So like you say, it is interesting just doing a typical, oh yeah, someone who's, you know, only been here a dozen different times. They might as well be a cast member, even though they're a different character each episode. But yeah, there's plenty of other ones who it's like, they're going an interesting way. It'd be interesting to see if they actually can flesh them out some more, give them more screen time. And so without, you know, spoiling your surprise, I'm sure there's plenty of other ones we could dig up again who is like, yeah, they're pretty heavily associated with the franchise. I don't think you would see Connie anytime soon because, you know, what's her name from FBI is just so busy on that show as like the main supervisor. And
yeah, I don't think we'll ever see Alana De Garza again or
Jeremy Sisto or Cyrus
or Annie Parisi. I'm sorry,
Annie Parisi, didn't she pass away?
Really?
No, what? I mean the character. Who am I thinking of?
She was killed. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you meant the actor. Yeah,
she's fine.
No. Annie Parisi, Alexandra Borgia is kind of the forgotten DA, and that's evidence of it. I'd forgotten that she was killed. Yeah.
Jack spends a huge ass episode avenging her death. We got to find the killer.
She's in a show, Friends from College, on Netflix, which I enjoyed, but I think a lot of people didn't. So, but it's nice to see Annie Parisi do something different.
She was on Person of Interest, I know, but yeah, I didn't follow some of her other stuff. But she's been in a lot of big giant TV projects. So, I mean,
yeah, she did Band of Brothers, didn't she?
That sounds Tom about Hanks. Right. I think she was on one of those big epic miniseries. So, like you say, all these guys got at least five different big roles that are street cred. So, is there any other just like type of mystery or court case you'd like to see them kind of deal with?
So, one thing I have been sorely lacking is a case with a scummy boyfriend with a wealthy wife who disappears. That I think is an archetypal case.
Yeah, because they've done a bunch of the
Law and Order offers. No, but is it plainly missing from these last two seasons? Yes, I would really like to see. Yeah,
the most we had was just a few
boyfriend suspect.
I think the closest we got was the one fashion guy, but that was about it. Yeah, the rest are typical. It's like they're trying to have them all stand out, but there are moments where you just kind of wish they could kind of get maybe an SVU type case or some other kind of thing that's going to involve some heavy just sampling through social media profiles. And because there's so much they're doing now, it's like they couldn't, even in the last like 4 years of the original run, that even then they tried to make it be less tech savvy and more just reading between the lines, coming up with a proper defense.
I think I'd like to, I mean, this is going to sound morbid, but I think sometimes with some of the best episodes of Law and Order are about serial killers. And, yes. You know, I understand that, you know, you being a fan of Criminal Minds, this is always a thing on Criminal Minds, but within the Law and Order universe, there's two that stand out to me. Is one of the guy who was a serial killer who let his lawyer come and see the bodies, and the episode became about the lawyer not violating his ethics, which was absolutely fantastic.
I remember that one. That was really good.
Yeah, and then there was another one from Texas, and and Abby got involved in that, and because the actual accused would have just had such a terrible disdain for women that he wouldn't deal with Abby, and it was a fantastic episode. So I'd like to see how they do with one of those, and you know, as it seems to be going, Yee will solve it and Maroon will prosecute it. It just seems to be going that way.
Maroon will make a shady emotional plea at some dark pool hall where she shouldn't be. You know, and that's how they'll solve the case, you know, like that's teamwork, you know,
with a bucket of tequila.
We lost track of how many times Logan was out of his district, and like you say, Cutter would almost get suspended by Jack, and plenty of other people have. I'm surprised didn't Jack end up in contempt in one episode?
Ended up in contempt with one episode, which was the homicide crossover. Homicide crossover episode.
Great show. Great crossover.
He's been censured by the law about the drunk driver, remember?
Yeah. And
he got censured by the law boards or whatever they're called. He's been in trouble too.
Remember when Jack was a lawbreaker or a rule breaker rather?
One episode, I want to say season 7 or 8, where he flat out like he's asking for help from Jamie, and then he's going to a few others. He's like, I'm gonna have to subpoena you if you don't come down. There's one episode where I think it's definitely an SVU episode even, where he just goes up to Casey Novak and is like, prosecutor, I'm firing you. It's just like, after a while, he kind of just, I wouldn't say he got hardened. I think he just got to where he's like, you got to play the game now. And here I am having to do stuff that I never wanted to do.
This is my hot take, is that I think we have to bring this up, that Sam Waterston maybe... we need to get someone new in that role.
No, that's fine. There are some episodes where he really brings it, and there's other episodes where he's kind of like, did they do that in one take? You know.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. Yes. We're like, what is happening? Like, why is there a 5% effort on this scene? Come on.
Why is his hair not brushed?
It's why like, isn't it? Sometimes
it is. It's pretty low key, but I know what you mean. And I've noticed it with some of, because he was really good in that one Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie, The Meaning of Sex or something, where he was like opposing a law firm in that. So it does make me wonder if he just has different energy levels, if he can't be on set too long because he's getting up there in age. I don't know, because they do such a good job for the most part of trying to hide everyone's, you know. How many times can you say you've seen an infamous actor give a really surprisingly unrecognizable performance on any of these Law and Order shows? Right. And then other times where you're like, ooh, I think they just barely got by.
<You know>? He's excellent in Grace and Frankie. And that's also.
Yeah. Right? It's so like, funny because, yeah, he was working with actors who he'd worked with multiple times on other movies and shows on that one. And he got to do comedy for once, where he's like, you'd see Jack do something witty, but for the most part, he was pretty dry and just kind of like, well, I guess we're going to do this. Yeah. So it does make me wonder if, and plus he can't be district attorney forever. You know, and, I would like to see a Van Buren reappearance. I know it probably won't happen because Essa Partha Margason is so busy with Chicago Med and Broadway, but just a thought, just putting it out there. Cause what did you guys think of where her or Dennis Farina's Fontana character?
So, I mean, I think we're big Van Buren fans. And yeah. I even like the way, I mean, it's interesting because that character, I think we get much more of a glimpse into her personal private world than many other characters.
Yeah, right? She dealt with the cancer scare the last
year
the show was on. They had the counselors, you know, played by J.K. Simmons and Carolyn McCormick, would have some pretty deep arcs sometimes. So, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and the thing is, they do it sparingly. Like, the show is not really about, the show is really about what's happening in the case, right? But the texture of it, I like the depth they give to that Van Buren character. And I also just like who she is as an, like there's one particularly interesting episode where she essentially makes some prejudiced assumptions about, you know, a young Black man around her. Yeah. It goes bad, and that to me, like, the height, that episode is so nuanced and so complicated, and it just shows that character, and the actor carries it in such an amazing way that I don't know. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I'd do almost anything to have her call somebody little girl in season 23.
Farina was a mystery to me, and I think that this was a fault of the writers. And this may have been why he took a powder after 2 years. I think it was 2 years he took a powder. Is that they kind of presented him with, you know, a lot of flash. You know, he had the gangster role. He had the Benz, and everybody's wondering where all of this money came from. And then they never explain it.
I concur. I you know,
you know,
the show is constantly on repeat on, you know, Women's Entertainment TV, and they have all the trivia and other fun bumpers and re-edits. I'm with you. My theory is, much like with, unfortunately, we can't have them back now because much like Briscoe, they have left us, these actors. But I do felt like they wanted to make them, you know, much like some of the shady characters Farina had played when he wasn't playing a cop based on his real life.
Yeah, persona. It just was never explained. And just to bring it back to the last two seasons, 21 and 22, this is something that has bothered me, is that much like Farina, it doesn't seem like they do the details very well. Now, as I was saying,
he had that one partner of his, Falco, played by Mike Imperioli of The Sopranos. Yeah. And I saw people really like him.
Yeah.
And he just never did it for me. And it was nothing against the character. I just always felt like they kind of pushed him on the viewer and then only got detailed with him. And then they replaced him with like a few other people for a few episodes. Cause, oh, that's right, we're trying to have him be Green's replacement. And then, oh, he's back now. being accused of being a dirty cop. I'm like, well, it's a little overwhelming. I'm like, what's
going on? Yeah, that was I think Jesse L. Martin was filming the movie Rent.
Yes.
That's why he went away. But in this particular last season and a half, I think the details, again, we're missing them in the, you know, Aaron and I were discussing this, is that the themes have been very good, but the details, they just haven't gotten right. And that's been my major complaint with the last year and a half.
Like in how they solve the crime?
Well, you know, the episode that we've just done, I won't spoil it for anybody, but they have a video of a crime being committed, and they never explain where this video came from.
I didn't think of that. Yeah.
And they never explain the veracity of the videotape. Has it been edited? Has it not been edited? Where did it come from? You know, little details like this. And this is something that Law and Order, especially in the early years, were very good about. Were about the details.
Yeah. I don't know if they're being given notes, focused more on, because it seems like as detailed as they get is halfway, you know, they find additional info and then they decide, okay, so now we got to prosecute it this way, because if we do it this way, we're going to probably lose because there's too much reasonable doubt. And I kind of like that, but I'm with you. There are times where there's like one or two, like they'll introduce DNA sample, but they still aren't able to introduce it. They get caught blocked by the defense, or like you say, they'll find a few other things and you're just like, well, wait, whoa. I think I missed something. Did I fast forward by accident? What happened? and Rick Ide, you know, the main showrunner, you know, he's been involved with all the Dick Wood productions and plenty of other procedurals. So it is a good question. It does make you wonder if they could be a little more interactive on Twitter, and we the fans could give some suggestions, because I know they'd take it probably.
Mm-hmm. We'd like them to take our suggestions.
There you go. Especially when you're doing every single episode. I'm this way with the new CSI. They bring back characters, but they don't make any real difference. They might as well be featured extras. Hot take. I really don't like the newest CSI. It's kind of a hate watch for me. And so it is a good question of, is like, are we just getting too old for this? Or is it just they focus too much on bringing the characters back and not giving them a storyline, you know, worthy of their exploration? And so that's where I am with CSI, but I am with you guys. There's some good, there's some stuff that could be done better on this new Law and Order. Would you like to see them do more two-parters, or is that only once in a while? Okay. All right. No, it's good to know. Some people like two-parters, other people hate crossovers because it means more hours.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt it, Aaron. No, did you want more two-parters?
Yeah, well, I think what we like about it is, right, this is about creativity within constraint. How many different ways can you tell a story within the same, you know, formulation? And so,
When they mess with the
formula, I tend to like these more than Oliver does when they mess with the formula, but I think they should be rare. Like the three-part one, so I'll admit, I don't watch the spinoffs. I am like a dyed-in-the-wool classic Law and Order only.
No, it's fine. I like the OG the most. And
but watching the spinoffs, I was like, for people who watch all these series, that was probably amazing. Like all that connection.
I dug it. But yeah, I understand, because like Oliver mentioned earlier, you know, Criminal Intent was at its best when they found different ways to light the room and get a confession out of the criminal. And, you know, like you said earlier, Aaron, you know, it is kind of like Star Trek, where you gotta unfortunately start it the same and end it the same, and in between is the different formula shifting. But at the same time, it's a hard puzzle. If you deviate too much, you've really lost everyone. And if you don't stand out, then you're just kind of a repeat of the last five episodes that were like that. And much like Star Trek, there are people I've talked to is like, they have only seen Criminal Intent or SVU, or they've only seen the original and they never caught up with it. Or, I mean, I've even met Homicide fans who they are so loyal to David Simon. They will watch Homicide or The Wire, but they don't like St. Elsewhere, Law and Order crossovers. I'm like, interesting. So it is you know, different strokes for different folks. You know, it's different.
I think the other thing that the writers have to deal with in present day is the fact that they are have to deal with a 22-year history of this particular 22. Show.
What can we do that you didn't already see in season five or seven?
And Aaron and I have become imprinted by what we, you know, the thrilling season three to season. There was a break there with Benjamin Bratt, but then, you know, to Jesse L. Martin and Lenny and Jerry Orbach.
Let's just say season nine. Yeah.
Yeah. We got that. That's been imprinted upon us. So the writers have to deal with our expectations, you know, right. And I do understand that tier part. I think I can only name one two-parter that I really enjoyed. And that was in the first season. And that was an episode called The Torrents of Greed, which was a mob, which was about, Teflon Don. His name escapes me at the moment.
Well, no, John Gotti,
You know, based on the John Gotti story. And Aaron hates mob episodes.
I hate it when they do that.
But every other else, I mean, they did that dreadful three-parter to going to Los Angeles, which was
terrible.
That was it with the Gilmore Girl and all that kind of stuff. It was just awful.
I actually don't remember that one much.
Oh, well, then you're
it's okay. Yeah, yes. You have to rewatch.
No. I mean, I will say the lowest point for me was actually watching Law and Order LA.
Oh, I never watched it.
It was bad because it didn't know what it wanted to be. I like Conviction because that dealt with March. And company, and I actually liked B.B. Newhart from Frasier and Cheers. Trial by Jury, even Conviction, or not Conviction, Chicago Justice was interesting because that bridged the whole Chicago universe together while showing Moriarty's, you know, next of kin. Law and Order LA was a mess because it's like they didn't make use of LA. It's like they were afraid to deviate everything. They aired the episodes out of order. That was the low point for me because I think that's just it. This is a New York show. And it's funny that you bring that up. Anytime they've tried to go to LA or sneak in Detective Munch or Van Buren in a crossover episode somewhere, it's kind of been just, there wasn't any need for that. But yeah, no, there's so many ways this can go. It seems like it's still got enough momentum to bring long time and new time fans in. Any prediction on we've already done our predictions on characters that'll possibly make a welcome cameo and types of crimes we'd like to see. Who would you like to see as the new district attorney?
Oh, you're gonna spoil
since,
my
since surprise. We brought it up, you know, it's like,
okay. That's okay, but I'll let Aaron go first.
Because it could very well be my Sam Waterston. I wouldn't be surprised if 2 to 3 years from now he's like, you know, I'm giving acting up. You know, I believe
he's 82 now, so
he
is
has
older.
To be at least.
He's older than Stephen Hill was when he retired. So,
oh, that's a good point. Yeah, Stephen, man, he got up there so much in age, and you were almost expecting him to unintentionally like. Be more like his Mission Impossible character at times.
Yeah, way back in the day. Aaron, who do you want to be the new DA?
So I don't have a particular wish, but I think what I want for that role is someone who does the politician role well.
Oh,
right, like someone who is not like mired in the day-to-day dynamics of the particular case, but someone who is able to think about, you know, from a and bring to us the viewer, what is political interference or motivation or support of these files look like? So I want that character, but who should play them? I don't know. You probably have a better.
It could be a newbie or it could be a long time guys. I've seen on a lot of those Dick Wolf shows. It could be any other person who I've seen on Sopranos or Oz or SVU. That'd be fine by me. It would just, as long as it just kind of, they do something great with it. Cause I've lost track of so many other crime shows who, like you say, is like they introduced a new cast member and they gave them nothing. Like there's maybe 2 seasons of Criminal Minds, for instance, I skip just because I don't learn anything new about the characters. I didn't find the mysteries interesting and the new people they added on were dreadful. And that says a lot because they were great in other roles I saw them. That's how I am with this new CSI. I'm like, if I've seen you guys be good on this show and that show, but had I only seen you on this show, I would have thought you were a bad actor. You know, and so it is about exposure and seeing what we've seen him in. I can think of a few guys who could be a not so sleazy politician that would be perfect for this, but that would be an interesting predicament. Would we want to have him maybe like Captain Cragen, where they've had a complex past and they come up in a crime case somewhere along the way, or they got to be more like Jack, where I'm noble, but I got to play office politics. I don't know. That would be an interesting predicament. And I'm sure, like you guys mentioned earlier, as a writer, it's got to be really difficult to make each episode stand on its own accord. And then,
yeah, my holiday wish was that the new DAB, Danielle Melnick. I think that would just be fantastic.
No. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think it would be perfect because it was never overtly explained whether McCoy and her had a relationship, but it certainly was. They seem to be buddies, at least. And
I definitely think so, because Jack would talk about a lot of his failed marriages with her. And by that point, I think he was on like his fourth of his fifth one. You
know, so. And they did. And they used to do Aaron's favorite setting, which is the DA restaurant, you know. And
unfortunately, again, yeah, because all the other ones who we otherwise might have said have unfortunately left us. You know, like,
yeah,
I love Jill Hennessy, but Claire died in a very tragic car accident, so we can't bring her back.
Yeah, don't remind me of that episode either.
Sorry.
I hated that episode. Danielle Melnick would be a super choice, I think, for the new DA.
Oh, but Novick, not Casey Novick, you mean?
No, the actor's name is Tova Felshud. She was... You may remember her because remember she got shot by the white supremacist, and that was kind of her exit out of the show. She survived.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was one of the few who didn't French exit the show. Like, as you were saying earlier, a lot of characters disappear without a trace.
Yes.
Even detectives like Bernard or like folks we've known for a long time, like,
yeah, they just evaporate
into the ether one day.
Yeah,
she actually had a proper exit to her storyline, but she did live, so she for sure could come back.
She might come back. I can see some of these other judges, and it's just so wild how when Jamie came back, she's still an assistant DA, which is so wild because on Trial by Jury she was a judge for one episode. So I think she must have revoked that and said that's too much trouble.
Yeah, Aaron and I were wondering about that as well. It was a stunt cast, but it was kind of, again, there was no detail. Is like she working under Jack? Is she in another jurisdiction?
There's no way she's working under Jack.
So she's in another jurisdiction, but that wasn't explained. See, this is what I mean about the details, right?
I agree. Like, it could be more details. I'm just saying. It's like, I can definitely infer it. It's like, where she, because she, much like, you know, Abby and Carmichael and Claire, for instance, you know, differed on something that they were working on with Jack, you could understand at least that they respectfully disagree and could still not compromise their friendship or work relationship. Yeah, it's like Jamie, you could kind of tell that, you know, she definitely didn't get along with facing off with Abby on court cases. And I think, just her recurring husband who, abusing their privilege of their divorce. I think she just kind of got a gist of, I don't trust anybody. I'm closing you all out. I'm my own, you know, I'm my own deal. I got this. And so, no, that's a good point. Because I would like, whoever gets to be the next DA, I don't want it to be a repeat of, like, I didn't mind the plot line, but remember when there's a few shady guys who Jack's having to combat for his run as district attorney. And so whoever it does, it better be earned. It better not be, hey, I'm bribing you or taking something you said out of context so I can force you to step down. This isn't the West Wing. I love the West Wing, but let's make it a little like you guys say, like, make there be someone who's like kind of honorable but imperfect, and then just kind of introduce just some kind of natural competition. Like it could be like, hey, I can't run. I'm not feeling it. Or it could be Jack gets defeated and then he has to pass the torch. he could literally go up to Sam or Nolan and just be like, you want to remain here? Or do you want to, you know, if you want, I can refer you to a different firm. That I wouldn't mind that either. If there's like three different firms determining a lot of the court cases and whichever the main DA's office is, that would be cool. If it's, because I always got a gist of that when on SVU, whenever someone would be the new captain or something, it was always cool from any kind of procedural standpoint. Are they going to get along, or are they all going to want to quit? You know,
I think Jack needs to do something truly in keeping with the origins of the Jack McCoy character, but right? So controversial that after that, he's not electable anymore. Like, I think we need a like showstopper.
That would be cool.
A huge, like, go out with a bang. Like, he's been with the series forever. Like, that's how we need to see. I want it with a bang, not a whimper. Like, I'm worried that he, like, disappears or fades away from the story. But I think they can do something really interesting where he's just not electable because of some truly courageous, controversial thing he does. Now, what that thing is, I don't know, but NBC should put me in that writer's room.
Oh, and there you go. And then Sam and Nolan open up a court case. He faced elderly abuse. You know, you were sure. prejudicing against him because he's whatever age. But yeah, no, that I'm with you. It can't be just and I'm simmering away. You know, like just fading into the back.
It would be sad to me. Like, we know that character. We love that character.
Yeah,
I don't want to see him just get watered down into mediocrity like that.
Right. It would be like if, I don't know, just. There's a new captain on Star Trek and Picard or Sisko just says bye-bye without proper goodbye. Yeah, you do need a whole ensemble because, like, this is what I'm actually worried. They're rebooting just about every other movie or show nowadays. I know the L.A. Law continuation is in the can, and I'm worried that that'll either be fun or it'll be too much. It'd be like, yeah, that was a bad idea. So I'm with you guys. You do want to see your character done justice. Like, I know Stargate's coming back, but if they're going to come back, they better, you know, they better have gone to the gym. I don't want them just standing at a desk, you know, and I get it. Sometimes that might not be the deal. I'm fine with them just standing there, you know, giving a speech or holding the bad guy at gunpoint, but don't, like you guys say, don't half-ass it. Don't have them just, well, they're there, but they might as well not been there. They didn't even speak, you know. So yeah, I got good hopes, but you know, I don't know how much they want to continue with this, because obviously people are always going to tune in. How much will be enough where they finally say, okay, that's it, you know, now we're actually done.
Yeah, I don't. It's whether the ratings will support it. And, you know, in this kind of world now with streaming and so on and so forth, and you know, the viewing audience is so fractured that I don't even know what a good rating is anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
and no, that is a good point, because they're often the first or the last one, depending on the shuffle. So it. Yeah, I do want it to be worthy of their time. And then there's other times where I don't want it to just exist just because, again.
And the other thing is, and this has to be said, is that Mariska Hargitay, this all really depends on Mariska Hargitay, because if Mariska Hargitay goes, I'm done, I think every other Law and Order show is going to die.
I agree. I can see them continuing Stabler's deal, but I even then he might say, you know, because Ice-T said the same thing. The minute anyone else, you know, packs it up, he's packing it up too. So, and you know, we already missed plenty of other heavyweights, like you mentioned Adam Schiff. He was a great voice. Mm-hmm. I still keep hearing rumors about Detective Munch making a cameo, but I doubt it. Belzer's retired in France, you know. It's just not gonna happen. And at the same time, like you say, maybe they were offered a return, but it just wasn't worthy of, you know, the character or their time. Or because being on set, you know, that's what gets it to everyone. It's just the exhausting hours in the writing room, lighting and filming the scene all day. And you know, Dick Wolf, much like all his other guys who we worked with, like Stephen Bochco, was always the same thing, where I'm going to allow a trap doors for you in case you want to come back. But I get it. We got to get used to having new people, because inevitably you're going to leave, or we're going to want to change it up a bit.
Yeah, but I don't think SVU could survive without. I mean, Danny Pino almost killed SVU. I mean, you know,
I'm not a fan.
But Mariska Hargitay is, I mean, what is, I gave up on SVU about 10 years ago, but SVU is what, 25 years old now?
Yeah.
Is it up to 25?
They've done that and they've changed up a lot of the other new guys. What they do good is just having the episode not necessarily be necessarily about an assault. Half the time it's another just questionable takedown. And Stabler, I think, was a win because, okay, he's going to take down a lot of the people that only he can, you know, much like Gorin can only take down lying psychopaths, only he can look at the schematics and play dirty, like you say, without, and much like Jack, without actually breaking the rule. Just find it. You give him plan A or B, he will come up with plan C through F. You know?
Yeah, I think Law and Order will survive as long as the ratings up. I mean, I think the biggest mistake ever was them canceling it in the first place, which was not necessary.
Because they shipped it around to like AMC, I remember, 5 years after that. And then they just said, no, just let it live on. And it took them a while to even embrace digital streaming because you couldn't always get all the seemings seasons other than like the last four on Prime. And the DVD says long out of print and very expensive. So before Peacock, you know, and truth be told, now that's another quandary since they've taken most of the stuff off of Hulu and Peacock is so expensive in addition to the other stuff you're streaming on. I am kind of worried about where people will actually be able to watch this in the future if they don't have cable or if.
Yeah, well, there's always, I can't, you know, when I, because I live in the States for 6 months of the year and it's like whenever I come down here, it's like, there's a Law and Order on every single hour of every single day between between Wii TV and the BBC America and all. And it's like, I don't think it'll ever go away.
It'll never go away. It'd just be interesting just for future generations. Just like, because some of those other shows that they, you know, crossed over with, like they just remastered New York Undercover, for instance. And it looks gorgeous. It's never looked better.
I have to think that if Tool has put their discography on Spotify, that all the seasons of Law and Order.
I may very well do that. Yeah, because that's
I have
true.
To think it's going to happen, you know?
Like, yeah, because Spotify's talked about getting into original movies or allowing anyone to upload anything. So it may very well become the next Daily Motion or YouTube.
Well, it's funny because about half of the seasons are available easily.
Yeah,
on all formats, but not in any particular order. Like it's like 4 to 8 or like 10 to 12.
And yeah, it's a shuffle and it's just confusing because you're like, they didn't have any music rights issues or lawsuits.
Like, I wonder about the licensing debacle in the background of that. And I have to think it is such a popular show. I mean, we have watched and reviewed every episode of this series.
Right, you can buy them off
that
iTunes.
That is like a month of our lives watching this show.
It's great, right?
For the podcast. Like, people want to watch this show.
Yeah. Even people who hate it will hate watch it, you know? It's just...
You can just put it on while you're washing the dishes, right? Like, you can you can follow it as closely as the three of us in this conversation do.
Exactly.
Or it is the perfectly serviceable background show. While you're goofing around on your phone, it's wonderful. You can.
I use the dumb dumb anytime we're doing a debate or ranking on here to remind people that there's going to be a hot take. Dumb dumb.
Things like that. I mean, they're iconic. Like they are. Is. People know what that reference is, even if they don't know the characters' names. Although I suspect they do.
People will recognize one of the actors because they'll see him in a movie before they were on the show or after, and you're like, that guy.
And we talk about that a lot, who, you know, for a whole generation of New York actors, anybody who was anybody had a bit part in Law and Order, right?
It had to be. Yeah.
You know, it's important to us as viewers, but I think it was also important to writers and actors and other folks who work in the background of that show. Like, that show has kept people employed for 22 years. Like, it's an amazing enterprise.
Yeah, they definitely said that in the recent Paley Center sit downs a few years back, and they were all about it. It's like, many actors were like, now they're finally looking at my resume just because that's like 5 steps up from where I was.
A conversation for another day is what we make of Dick Wolf venturing into the podcast world.
Ooh.
With a pretty good offering last year called Into the Dark Woods. There's just one season, But
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's sort of a, I want to say it's a civic mystery. Like it's like a grown-up Nancy Drew sort of a story, but it's good work. And so, I mean, I don't know what Dick Wolf is cooking up, but I'm glad that he's still cooking up original Law and Order.
Totally. I'm sure he had fan mail from it for a while. He's like, let me find a better writing staff. Let me find a better group of people to that you'll actually want to follow around. But no, I see this now. Okay, so Dark Woods. Wow. I'm going to have to make some serious time for this.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Give it a listen.
Sweet, sweet. Okay. Wow. That's some serious cast attached to that. That's great. Wow. Okay. I learn something every day. So, no, that is true. They could easily... How would you feel if they even had a exclusive, like, special that was through podcast only? Because just about every other movie or show has an audiobook, it seems.
I mean, I'd listen, but would the average viewer listen?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I know some of them off by heart. That's what became the lullaby. Was the, I knew it was going to happen. I could close my eyes.
Holy. Well, this has been a delight having you all on here because this is eye-opening. It's cool to see what a fandom thinks of everything, you know, and, you know, Oliver mentioned Criminal Intent earlier. For the longest time, for such a popular spinoff, couldn't find any synopsises of specific episodes or plot lines. It's like these shows were out before the internet really got good. And then again, you know, like, as the internet was getting really good, like the, like you guys said, the way it was distributed changed as well. So it is interesting how I got good hopes for this. You guys are somewhat optimistic too. And obviously, you know, enjoy taking on every episode, good or bad, because it's just that appealing. It is that intriguing. So it'll be interesting when I probably recap this maybe 2 years from now. It's like, what's changed now? And we'll definitely do a character ranking. That'll be fun. I can only imagine who's going to be at the top of the bracket and at the very bottom will be the usual suspects. And all together, so you guys have been doing this for quite a while, the 27th Precinct. I like your logo.
Credit to Oliver on the logo.
Oh, because you really did. You made it sure it was the black, white, and red looking with a bit of yellow for the shielding. It's like, that's awesome. Because for a often mentioned police station, they really don't show the like an exterior shot all that much. So this has been a delight having you guys on. You guys are all caught up on season 22, technically season 2 of the return of this. Any other podcast ventures you guys are doing or thinking of doing? Want to promote?
Well, I know that Aaron did a fabulous one about a show that you, I'm sure, would have enjoyed.
And so, yeah, I've got nothing in the works, but if folks are doing a watch of Mr. Robot,
okay.
For years, I was part of a show called Mr. Rewatch. And
Mr. Rewatch.
That was a really fun project. And so, and I was also part of a show called Dietcast, which was about a feminist show, unfortunately, very short lived, called Dietland, that was on a few years ago.
Oh, so you were part of that one. Okay. I did see an advertisement of some podcasts that were covering it. So that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. So you can find some of my archived work, but Oliver actually has current projects on the go, and you'll want to hear about those for sure.
Yeah, one of them is we're doing a little retrospective of Star Trek, the original series, which everybody does.
But everyone kind of doing Star Trek podcast now.
We're kind of doing it in a different way. It's called 78 Episodes, 30 Good Ones. And
ouch. No, that's all good. That's awesome. That's I
love that. And if you're a music nerd, you can join Jason and I every second week on In Your Ear Holes. So that's you can find In Your Ear Holes or 78 Episodes, 30 Good Ones on your favorite platform.
That's awesome. Oh man. And for those who are trying to master the art of the binge watch, what tips and tricks do you guys have? Because it's a big time suck and you got to really want to do it. And not some So I've talked to a few other similar podcast networks where they're all about that, and I think it was why we love this or something like that. And it's interesting how some people will be like, totally want to cover it 5 episodes in, I'm bailing. No, you can't do that. So what do you guys recommend for doing podcasts that, you know, require extensive amount of episodes and rewatching sometimes? Any tips and tricks?
I'll tell you, the upshot of it is that when we did 20 seasons, because we did the first 20 seasons in 20 episodes. So Aaron and I watched every single episode within a 2-week gap. So 23 episodes within a 2-week gap for when we recorded. And it was fun to do. But Aaron and I both realized that we never, ever watched another episode of Law and Order for about 3 years, maybe, Aaron?
Yeah.
Let it circulate. Let it die down to where you forget the details. Yeah. Now it's fresh and new again.
Yeah, it was fun. Poor Aaron had to do all the driving, so it was probably more taxing on her.
I remember saying to my partner at the time, I need you to stop talking to me. I have 10 hours of Law and Order to watch today. But really, I mean, the thing is, these things are, it's a labor of love, right? Like every podcast where, mm-hmm. I mean, I would say, you know, don't sleep and shirk your responsibilities.
Right.
But my real advice, of course, is, you know, hydration is important. And so are snacks.
Yeah.
And, you know.
We're very pro snack.
Very pro snack.
You gotta have a snack. Gotta get out the chips and guacamole and have fun.
But truthfully, many of us are going to be watching TV anyway, right? So you might as well channel it for creative purposes. But primo binge watching snacks, anybody? First, what's the first choice? I heard chips and guacamole already.
Totally. It won't put you to sleep, and you'll at least have some veggies in your system, you know, be able to take a restroom break. But bring salsa if you're really peppy. You want something that's really going to keep you awake, especially if when you see that really emotionally traumatic episode, or the one where you're like, I want to prosecute, you know, or that emotional outburst in court. And then it really gets in the mood. Hell, even dark chocolate snacks. Justin's has those. If you want some dark chocolate peanut butter cups, those really put you in the mood. I noticed that, especially when I was rewatching through LA Law and The Practice. It's like, for whatever reason, it just works very well for a legal show. Doesn't make any difference for the action or horror anthology ones so much. Those ones are just like, my snack is more interesting than what I'm watching on screen. No, this has been a delight having you both on here. This was Dynamite.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah.
27th Precinct can be found on Twitter. Do you guys have any other handles you want to promote, or is that good enough?
That's where you find us. And we do encourage people to subscribe, because we are looking at some winter giveaways. So
yes, get those shirts, those t-shirts.
Exactly. Subscribe on Twitter. And of course, you know, our individual handles will have whatever exciting stuff we're up to next.
Bingo. Was there Nemo? Okay. You guys rock this. This was so much fun, because it was kind of a more atmospheric kind of take, as opposed to a, you know, just like, and then this happened, and then this happened.
Well, thank you. Thank work. You again for having us.
Anytime.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
And keep binging.
Yeah. We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.